Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. The show tapes live most Thursdays on YouTube, 5:30 p.m. Pacific. Check my Twitter feed, ActionZaku, for more. Hope you enjoy the show. I'm Zach Birchie. Welcome to Ancast. Jacob's here.
Hey, folks.
Yeah, no live show on YouTube this week. We're a little busy. But it's time for the fall 2017 anime season, man, so we better start rounding up.
Too much anime for me to get ready, get all pretty for the camera.
So. Yeah, we're both a little stuffy today, too.
Yeah, definitely.
So we watched a ton of anime. This all started last Saturday, Sunday, kind of. It was slow at first. It was like Gintama... And then kind of, you know, a couple little shows here and there throughout the week. But then Saturday had 11 shows.
Yeah, it was so it started Sunday, and then it was like one or two things throughout the week. And then Friday it was five, and it was like, oh, well, five, that's not, you know, that's a little more than, but we're ready. And then Saturday was 11 things in one day, which I don't think has ever happened before. Maybe we've had a day that had 11 or 12, but
we've gotten up to like nine before.
Uh-huh. But it was just,
It's 11 shows. We have six.
And then it was one thing
people?
After that every
so
day.
You're posting like 50 some reviews in a day.
Yep.
The preview guide. Well, anyway. So I assume you watched all of this stuff.
Yes.
You wrote up some of it.
Yeah, I wrote up as much of it as I could. I wish that I could have gotten to more on this. The big day I missed was that Saturday.
Yeah.
But I wrote three or four that Saturday, so it could have been worse.
Well, you wrote up about half of them, and then you had to spend the rest of the day editing and all that shit.
Well, yeah, like, I would take notes, but I didn't even watch, like, so I didn't get to some of those premieres till, like, Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, I half wrote, like, Garo, but really couldn't.
Yeah, I was working on New York Comic Con coverage and the manga guide, and like 50,000 other things.
Right, you were dealing with Comic-Con, and I was doing a preview guide, and that was
But
like
I did get to stuff. I did. The point is, we should stop bitching about how much work we have to do and get to the show. Mm-hmm. We did watch a tremendous amount of anime. I watched a bunch of it. I watched a bunch of this stuff yesterday, but I was kind of trickling it out throughout the week as well. All right, dude. I feel like the best thing to do is to just kind of go through them, starting from the top, and we can talk about them kind of in the order that they premiered. I'm just going to go down the preview guide list here.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I've only watched probably half of this stuff, maybe a little less. Mm-hmm. You've seen a lot more than that.
I've seen basically everything unless it was a sequel that I wasn't familiar with.
So the first thing that I watched up top here is Black Clover.
Ugh.
I feel like we can get it out of the way really fast.
Oh, yes.
Because my note, I wrote down notes while I was watching all this stuff, and Black Clover I just wrote, next!
Yeah.
Because, what the...
I don't think I can do an impression of the lead's voice, but people are not exaggerating when they say it is just nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah, it's horrible. And he's screaming the entire episode.
The entire... I was like, why is it... So, you know, there's sort of a common thing. You know, there's Japanese cartoon characters that have a vocal tic. Like, they'll end every sentence with nya or daro or something like that. It seemed like his vocal tic was just to scream. Like, it wasn't even... He didn't even have to be angry. He could just be casually describing something, but he had to end the sentence with... Ah!
Yeah.
Ah!
Well, you know, and then he's like, I'm going to be King Wizard. And you're like,
God,
yo, checking out.
Yeah.
Checking out.
Like,
First, you'll have to defeat the three wizard jewel, and then, that's the first part, and it's just structured like every other goddamn.
And then there's a tournament, and then there's a bad guy who used to be a good guy, or whatever. I don't fucking care. And, like, it's, I don't, look.
It's really about family, though.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I get that there's shonen tropes that get repeated and stuff like that, but I thought Fairy Tail was the most, like, derivative thing in the world. This was more derivative than Fairy Tail.
Derivative of Fairy Tail.
It kind of was. Yeah. It was like, wait a minute, this is Naruto and Fairy Tail.
But it was popular in Shonen Jump, right?
It still is. It's still running. And
did it just get to, like, a good part of the story? Because I didn't hear a damn thing about it.
I think it just has.
That's okay. And that maybe that. Me saying, like, I didn't hear a damn thing about it till the anime came out. Well, I'm a pretty anime-focused person, although that's changing a lot in recent years. Pretty anime-focused person, but most people only hear about it after the anime comes
Definitely.
Out. But I feel like I've heard of The Promised Neverland. I've heard of, like, other stuff that's big in Shonen Jump that isn't getting an anime anytime soon. I mean, that's getting an anime pretty
soon.
It is.
But a lot of it is.
But I heard about it like a year ago.
It's One Piece, My Hero Academia, like Promised Neverland, and this, as far as I know, that are kind of high in the rankings.
Boruto.
Bort, yes. And
Dragon Ball Super.
Bort, Son of Naruto.
Probably not.
I don't know. Dragon Ball Super runs in Jump, does it run in Jump?
Yes.
Oh. Well, I thought maybe it was his own
Doesn't it?
Thing. I thought maybe it was
a lot
thing.
Of some of these probably run in other magazines.
Yeah, I thought that was something. Fucking, I don't. Again, I do not read.
I hear Jump.
It.
I think Jump.
Well, we think of the genre. We think of like this belongs in Jump, even if it's not actually in the magazine. But Black Clover is actually in the magazine. I know that for sure. I know that every time I ever heard it mentioned, I was not looking forward to this anime because people were like, oh, it's going to be animated really well, and oh, like a new shonen adventure, and I'm not really that hardcore into shonen, but I am. I always do check out what a thing is because sometimes I'll find a new surprise. I really like My Hero Academia now, by the way.
Yo, also, we were just in Japan,
mm-hmm.
and there were no, like, store displays. No, like, you walk in the aisle and they have, like, pictures of Black Clover, like, laminated cutouts of Black Clover.
Well,
and, like,
yeah, well, that was long before the
display.
Anime was...
No, know. But if it was a popular manga, they would have had one of those.
Right. I don't know exactly where it ranks. I know that it's, like, in the top five in Shonen Jump, but all I ever heard about it, like, from anybody who ever mentioned Black Clover was... Black Clover. Like, oh, yeah, that's the fucking grocery brand. That's the Kroger brand one that's popular.
Babby's First Shonen.
Yeah, Babby's First Shonen. It's popular, but just because I think
they always need one of those.
Yeah, you need one of those.
I feel like it's the new Fairy Tale, right?
Like, yeah, Fairy Tale ended.
And now there's this, which is similar kind of main character, right? Spiky hair. Big fiery
yells
personality,
lot,
yells
yeah,
all the time.
Right. Yeah.
If this gets loaded up with totally over the top, inappropriate fan service,
right?
Which doesn't seem to have any.
No, I
didn't notice
I
any giant
it,
boob ladies, which is usually a Shonen Jump staple.
All I ever hear about it, what I hear about Fairy Tail is, oh gosh, it's really gross, like it's really booby and gross, unusually so. That's what I hear about Fairy Tail, and also, you know, the obvious One Piece thing. But like with Black Clover, the only thing I ever hear about it is, oh, it just has no distinguishing features whatsoever.
Oh,
like I hear that over and over, is it has no, and nobody brought up that the lead is that annoying, but that's because they never had to hear him. And somebody brought up, like, you know, we're surprised by this. But going back and looking at that manga, he does end every sentence with an exclamation point. And I just didn't think that they were going to adapt it as just...
They're like, oh, he's shouting in every scene.
And he holds it out for 5 seconds every time. It's like, what is happening?
They're like, oh, he's yelling all the time. And the voice actor's like,
Well, the voice actor's new. That's the other thing. He's inexperienced. This is his first named role. And it's like, oh. And he sounds it. He sounds it because the thing that's so annoying about him yelling is because you're okay with a protagonist in a shonen thing yelling if it really feels like they're putting their breath behind it. He feels like he is, like what I just did there. He's yelling, like, without, like, straining himself, which he probably shouldn't. He's just making the sound of one yelling. Making a voice that sounds as if one is yelling is the best way to characterize it, which is annoying. It's more annoying. So, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're going to burn that kid's voice out.
Yeah.
And they're
going
to wind up replacing
it. Yeah. It's a little bit of a dodgy situation.
If it runs forever, like, who knows?
Who knows?
I'm sure that's the intention.
Anyway, Black Clover, it has no distinguishing features whatsoever except it's annoying.
He's going to be King Wizard.
Yep. He's going to be King of the Wizards. The Wizard King.
I'm going to be Wizard.
Yeah. He's a real whiz. Kid, something, something rap.
Yeah.
It just feel like 4Kids would have gotten this one back in the old days. It is definitely one of those.
Yeah, all right. So don't watch that, I would say.
Nope.
I didn't watch Mr. Osamatsu Season 1. Mm-hmm. So I didn't watch Mr. Osamatsu season 2. Can you give us a Matsu update?
All right. So last time we saw the Matsus, they were being their horrible, horrible, horrible old selves. And it's coming back from season 2. Iami and his sidekick, who's just side characters, had been on vacation, and they come back to Japan to find that after their one-hit wonder status of the first season of Mr. Osamatsu, the brothers have become even more, what's the word? Lazy is the easy word, but I feel like fetid, like just big piles of lazy flesh that, like, sign things for people and, like, sell their bottled sweat and things like that, and they live in, like, this basically looks like they renovated their home into a big disgusting pachinko parlor looking place. And so this video somehow makes its way into the past of the old Osamatsus from the original 60s TV show, and they see what they're become in the future, and they're horrified by it, so they try to change their future by adapting in more respectable ways. And so they become, like, Jushimatsu becomes a CG version of himself that looks exactly like the CG in Stand By Me Doraemon. Mm-hmm. Like, exactly. And one of them becomes a live-action person, and the other one becomes, like, He-Man. And basically, they just become different mediums of animation in order to become more respectable. Mm-hmm. But people hate that because it's too experimental, so they don't do that either. But the whole episode was just, like, let the animators do whatever they want. So first you had this really disgusting first half where it was just showing the most over-the-top, like, decadence and filth that the brothers would fall into after getting even a hint of success. And then the second half was just like, let's have live-action Totematsu because it's funny. And, you know, it's really great is what I'm saying. That show is extremely – and it's animated even better than before. Like, the show was always a little more cartoonishly animated, a little more fluid because, like, it was a huge success. But now that they've sold that much of it and it's become that much of a hit, they just – every frame is like a painting of horrible, ugly cartoon comedy. It's really good. So,
I feel like I should watch Osamatsu-san.
Yeah. I would pick out, it doesn't really hit its stride until later. I would pick out like some episodes in the middle. And you don't have to start at the beginning.
I hate watching stuff like that.
But you don't have to see the beginning.
I don't think I've ever followed anyone's advice when they tell me that. If I'm going to watch something, I will watch the whole thing.
It's a completely episodic comedy. So
I like the idea of it. I like the idea of not having to sit through 26 episodes of something. Mm-hmm. But it's just never going to be... Because then if I have a discussion about it, they'll be like, oh, well, in episode 8, and be like, oh, I didn't watch that one. Because then I can't have a conversation about it because I only saw 5 episodes in the middle or whatever.
Right.
I'll get to it.
But it is truly baffling that something like this became as big as it was. I don't know what this says about Japanese pop culture or audiences right now, but it is like, yeah, the premise is these are the 6 most lazy, hateable, awful, just the worst neats in existence. And that's apparently a lot of girls want to bone that or something because I don't know why. Cause like, look at them. They're just the same character design 6 times, but I don't know. It's a mystery.
Okay. Moving on. Let's see. Junie Tyson Zodiac War. I will be watching week to week. It is stupid, excessive, hyper violent, nihilistic trash. That's pretty well animated and has a really fun, stupid, nihilistic premise, so...
I'm not sure it's nihilistic. I mean, I'm not sure what it's about, but usually Nisio's not a nihilistic guy.
I just mean violence-wise.
Violent, yeah. It's very violent, but that's about it, yeah.
Sometimes that level of violence is referred to as nihilist.
Yes, that's true. I think it's just indulgent, perhaps, maybe.
Sure, that's a better word. I liked it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's dumb. Basically, the animals of the Zodiac are anime... animal fighters.
Anime serial killer warriors.
Yeah.
And they get together for a prize.
It's all very, like, it's all super edgelord, like, but it's not taking itself all that seriously.
Not at all. Not at all seriously, which is good. The only thing that bothers me is...
they want you to think the characters are cool. So in a sense, there are serious scenes, it has a serious tone.
That's fair.
But... the show doesn't appear to be taking its premise seriously.
Well, how could it? It seems like a premise that you write down, like you just have spread, and you're like, okay, I have to fill in the details later so it makes sense.
Yeah.
But they didn't fill in the details later, so it doesn't make sense. It's just
Whatever. It's fine. I liked it.
It's funny, but it is like, wait a minute, where are the parts where this has, where you understand why this happened at all? Those parts don't exist. It's just, there's an evacuated city, and there's warriors that are, like, themed after animals in the Zodiac, and they have magical powers, and they're trying to kill each other because the winner will get one wish. What are they getting a wish from? I don't know. It's just one wish, whatever they want. It's like they didn't fill in the details at all, but they're just like, here's this bunny man.
Well, isn't that all story stuff that you'll get later?
I'm not sure.
Everything you just described sounds like things they will tell you at the end.
Yeah, I'm not sure. They're never going to explain it. Apparently, they're never going to explain why all of these warriors have magical powers or are dressed like Zodiac. Why would they theme themselves on Zodiac animals?
It's well, why just do you stuff. Need answers to that, though?
Well, because it's just a cartoonish. It doesn't make sense. There's no world building. It's just like this just is, which is fine. I don't need there to be world building, but it makes it so you can't take it seriously, which is A-OK.
Does every show that has magic powers in it, like, stop to explain why everyone has magic powers?
If you have a legacy of 12 families that are super assassin warriors, like,
well, there you go, and they can use magic.
Yeah, it's just usually there's more explanation than that. It's funny, that's all. Usually there's more explanation. Look, I'm not the only one who made this
observation. These criticisms, I'm just saying that these criticisms feel like they're there for a lack of anything to criticize.
No, oh, if you want actual criticisms, I have those. This isn't even a criticism, it's just, well, the story seems like it's
held together with bubblegum. And I'm saying it feels like it's built on a weird expectation. Like, it doesn't make sense to me that you would immediately start, why do these... This is such a crazy situation.
Well,
like,
it's a crazy situation.
You're watching anime. Like,
but a crazy situation. Okay, well, think back to...
It knows you know you're watching anime.
Think back to hyperviolent OVAs and stuff like that. Like, they do have that issue of, like... Yeah, it knows that you know that you're watching an anime, where they don't feel the need to explain anything. But modern anime isn't like that. Usually stuff like Elfin Lied or Future Diary, even if it's crazy and it couldn't happen, it's ridiculous. Like, they do try to explain it, and it seems like, in this hypothetical world, here's how this happened. A Zodiac board doesn't even try, which is funny. Like, it is entertaining. It
yeah,
does
like
not
that
even
would
try
be like a prequel
itself.
That would, if you were interested in that, it would explain why. But
it's
what
uncommon.
You're supposed to be interested in, what you're supposed to be interested in, are the characters fighting each other mm-hmm. for this goal. That and the goal is mysterious, and that seems like they're keeping it mysterious on purpose. And we'll mm-hmm. explain that later, maybe. But like, why the world is the way it is feels like. Not important to the story that they're trying to tell.
It's not, but usually that stuff is included in there. Think of any other light novel anime as like as a way to like get you and make you take the story seriously. This show is not interested in that, so it's kind of more fun because of that. It's also not interested in giving you like a sympathetic point of view character because they're all terrible. It's just like these are all horrible, monstrous serial killers. Even the ones that pretend not to be probably aren't. We have not been given any sympathetic motive or point of view yet. Which is interesting.
Sure, but there's a joy to the violence.
I'm not disputing that, no.
There is a gleeful sadism to it.
Right.
There's some joy in it, is what I'm saying.
Absolutely, but it's just, it's unusual. It's just, it's unusual to cut to the quick that directly. Usually there's some sort of like, here's the story, and here's who you should care about, and this is just like... Look, I came up with this crazy character design. I'm going to find an excuse to have them necromancy murder this person, and we're just going to describe how it happened. Like, that usually is not done that directly, but it's fine. It's A-OK. The show looks really good.
But you're either going with it or you're not. Mm-hmm. Like,
yeah.
I just went with it. It sounds like you didn't. You stopped and were like, wait, why can he do that? Like,
really? I mean, no, I did go with
like,
it.
Like, the show
just,
is so obviously not trading in that kind of world building.
But, yeah, but it's... Look, it's unusual. There aren't shows that don't give a fuck about that very often, basically at all. That's sort of... I associate that with, like, old, gritty OVAs that are just there for the spectacle, and it doesn't really matter.
Well, but what does this remind you of most?
That, which is what I'm saying. I was drawing a comparison. So I'm drawing a comparison... So I'm saying if you haven't
seen the
show already...
Once you know that's what it is...
Yes. If you haven't seen the show already, that's what you're getting into. It's not like Future Diary or other Battle Royale type anime. It's like a lost OVA that happens to look...
It's like Battle Royale High School.
Right, yeah. I'm just saying it's really, really doofy and impossible to take seriously. So if you want that out of your violent spectacle, you should watch it. It's very well animated. The character designs are my favorite thing because they're just... Ridiculous.
Yeah, it feels like it's just an excuse to have character designs and fights. And that's
yes.
It.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to Urahara, which I didn't get a chance to watch, but you did.
Yeah, I liked it.
You liked it? You're kind of a little bit of an outlier voice on this, because opinion appears to be divided.
Yeah.
Some people are okay with the way the show looks. Mm-hmm. Some people are not.
Yeah, I think I'm kind of an apologist for it. I didn't, at first glance, like the way that it looked, the art design looked, but then I saw it in motion, then I saw it in context, and I was like, oh, okay, I see what they're going for. Frankly, it feels like a doujin animation. It feels like a doujin film. It feels like a student film. The voice actresses are, two of them, one of them has experience, the other two are completely, this is their only role. And they just sound like normal girls talking to each other, and the dialogue is very lackadaisical. It feels like real girls talking about whatever just naturally. It doesn't seem anime at all. It's not moe, which you would think. You look at it, okay, this is moe. The girls are not moe. They don't have any kind of pigeonholed personality that's meant to appeal to a thing. They don't play to camera at all. They just sort of exist. And it's weird. And there's very little animation in the show, but every single frame is like somebody's very, very carefully composed, like, scrapbook piece. Like, some fashionista's, like, you know, little display stand is what basically every frame of the story looks like. So even though there's very little animation, it's like, oh, this is extremely relaxing. But you kind of have to be down for that. You have to be down for looking at this Harajuku fabric aesthetic, and that's kind of it. And listening to these girls, like, sort of talk about their feelings in the most, like, blasé way, and you have to be entertained by that, because that's kind of it for the show. But I was entertained by it. I was like, oh, this is really relaxing and unique. It has an aesthetic that I haven't seen in anything. It just feels so, I don't know, unfocused tested and sincere and simple, and like I'm watching somebody's student film, that I was charmed by it. But look, it's not for everybody, and I wouldn't even recommend it to that many people. It's just like, oh, this feels like something I wasn't even supposed to see, which I know is not the case, but it's just different. It's unique, so, yeah.
Feels like a student film.
Yeah.
Wouldn't recommend it to everybody. Sounds like Darren Aronofsky's mother to me.
Well, except this is pure pleasantness. This is every frame is, okay, is meant to make you feel pleasant. And the art design, I will stand by the art design. Like, I think actually if it was animated more, it would be too busy and it would hurt my eyes and bother me, like Rolling Girls. The Rolling Girls, that show bothered me. It was impossible to tell what the focal point was in any shot, and it was just, ugh, I didn't like it. But like, this is really, I don't know, it just sits on a frame for like 30 seconds, 40 seconds, and you can just go, oh, like, here's the little details, and oh, this is a nice little piece of art, of pop artwork, and then we move to the next one, etc. So, you know.
It stays on one piece of art for 30 seconds?
More than that, but, excuse me, less than that. More than that.
Say, no, it just holds on a single still piece of art for minutes at a time.
No, there's animation. The girls are moving, and they're moving their mouths and stuff like that, but it's not super dynamic. There's not a lot of animation. It's lackadaisical. And there's also a stuffed, the mascot character is a stuffed piece of fried shrimp, and he's cute. So he's like a muffler. You know when you wear like a scarf around your neck that's sort of big and poofy? He's like that, only he's a fried shrimp, and he comes from outer space. And it's cute.
I feel like I've seen that neck pillow before.
Maybe. It might be based on an existing thing.
I don't know. Okay. There's another string of shows I didn't watch, including Infinity Force, which I saw 15 minutes of or so at Anime Expo.
Mm-hmm.
And,
people were saying, "Is it looks like a Tekken cutscene or something?"
Yeah,
it's okay.
Yep,
it looks like
Tekken cutscenes. Probably look a little, maybe like PlayStation 1 Tekken cut. That's mean. PS2 Tekken cutscenes.
They're pre-rendered PS2.
You know, I would say like early generation PS3, maybe like.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's a 3D show that I like this season, but it's not Infinity Force. But I wouldn't sit here and say I didn't like. I only saw about 15 minutes of it. Mm-hmm. What did you think?
I watched the first episode, but it was like, I'm not familiar with these characters, and the show assumes that you are.
Yeah, it does.
And I don't know who they are, so.
It would be like watching the Avengers, but you haven't
seen
them.
Yeah, it's like I've never seen.
Because it is just the Avengers, except for Tatsunoko superheroes, so it's, yep. Gatchaman and others.
Gatchaman,
Tekkaman,
Kashan, Tekkaman.
Oh, Kashan, yeah. Kashern.
Kashern, who didn't show up yet, but he's going to be there. And the last one is, what is his name?
Technoman?
No, not Tech. It's going to bother me that I don't remember. It's like Hydro something. he has like a silly name that, shit, I don't remember. Anyway.
Kashern, Technoman, Polymer?
Polymar. Hurricane Polymar Man.
Hurricane Polymer? Have you ever seen Hurricane Polymer?
No, but that's why I couldn't remember it. So my point is I'm not familiar with any of these except for some of the new reboots of Gatchaman and Kesher.
Well, I've seen plenty of it. I'm not, like, a huge fan of any of it. Like, it's okay.
But I didn't think the animation was, like, bad. It seemed like it was totally suitable for this. It was fine. But I just, if I'm not familiar with these Avengers, why would I watch this?
Yeah, totally. All right, I didn't watch King's Game. You said it was dumb as shit.
Yes, but in such a low-rent way that I'm not sure. It is straight up the Lost Village School Days. Like the way it looks, the way it's animated, the way it sounds, the sheer level of the, like, basic-ass, embarrassing debauchery. School Days is the closest comparison. It is as low-rent as School Days, which is funny to me. But I like School Days more because School Days isn't constantly, like, blah, in your face with, like, blood and explosions and sex or whatever. King's Game is like that right out of the gate.
No.
School Days is funnier to me. I think it's the best of those shows because it starts off pretending to be something more decent and slowly becomes that, which is more entertaining to me until it ends the way that it ends, which is hilarious. But, like, King's Game just right out of the gate, like, blah, and, like, the songs are too, like, all rock, like, butt metal American songs. So,
okay.
From bands I've never heard of, just like the shittiest butt rock bands. So it makes it worse, is what I'm saying. When that's the song. It's like when the opening is like a J-rock band or a J-pop band.
Are you telling someone? Are you saying to watch this or no?
No, don't bother.
But you have a smile on your face, like you should.
I was just laughing, remembering those songs because usually.
I'm just trying to figure out what to do here, Jacob.
I wouldn't, you know, this season is rich with promise, and usually I watch more hate watchy stuff when there's not as much promise. But since there's like a lot of good stuff, you don't really have to make room in your time for King's Game. Yeah.
Opinions were very divided on Just Because.
I couldn't tell you what it was about.
I watched it too, and I could not, except for. Remember high school?
Remember high school?
It was kind of like this. Here's an idealized version of it.
Yeah. Do you remember it? Yeah. It's the only other aspect of it that's like, because I had to, so that's the funny thing. I had to write the plot synopsis for Just because of the way that the schedule was, everybody else was busy at the time. And I was like, shit. So I was trying to figure out what happened in it, and I couldn't. It was like that scene in Superman, the original Superman, where he opens up that box, there's kryptonite in it, and he looks back and forth at Lex Luthor and at the kryptonite, like, no, you cannot do this to me. That was me looking at Just Because and trying to remember what happens in it and what the plot is. Because, like, there's no plot apart from one of these kids is a transfer student who lived here as a child and transferred away in middle school and high school and is coming back for the last semester of high school, so he knows these people, but he doesn't know these people. That's the only premise. The rest of it is just kids bullshitting. And so I was like, how do I describe the plot of this?
Well, I mean, you know, you can be in a mood for that, or it can be the type of kids bullshitting that you find really charming or interesting or whatever. But this just wasn't, it was just slow.
If the kids are not mean to one another, if the kids bullshitting is not like my high school experience, which is something, there are nice kids. It's not all like dark and grim, but like there have to be mean, weird assholes and there has to be some drama. That I'm not interested in the rosy version of high school. It's not, I can't relate to it. I don't find it believable. I don't buy it.
I don't tuck into it like it's a warm cup of tea and oh, look, they're talking to each other and going to school. Like, yo, like I've
teens
seen.
Teens are monsters. I don't think so.
Plenty of this shit. Yeah. And like, you can do that while also having a story. And that's more what I'm interested in. Like Sound Euphonium. Is that exactly?
Sound
Euphonium
has a plot.
But it has a story.
Sound Euphonium has a plot for whatever I could.
And it seems like it's interested in making you interested in the story, not just putting a camera down in front of some animated teenagers and letting them do their animated teenager thing.
Yeah, and it's also Kyo Annie, so at least you're looking at a pretty thing, you know.
Yeah, whatever. It just wasn't my thing. Yo, I really liked Recovery of an MMO Junkie, though. That was good.
Loved it.
It's really cute.
Super adorable.
Yeah, that's it. It's pretty much it. Like, it's cute and entertaining, but I really like the characters, main character especially, and, like, it just seems really solid. It seems really well put together, really thoughtful. The game that they're playing is also really cute looking, so, like, It has a good aesthetic to it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll definitely watch that. It seems good. I don't know how many episodes it's supposed to run.
I think it's just one season.
Just one core.
And I'm really curious what the guy's deal is. That's all been the perspective. The perspective is this 30-year-old woman who dropped out of corporate life to play MMOs, as you do. And, you know, fell for this girl. She's playing a guy character. She fell for a girl avatar online who's being played by a guy, and neither of them know each other. And, you know, rom-com setup. But I'm like, we meet the guy briefly, and he's like, he's in the corporate life. Like, he's obviously making bank, and he dresses well and stuff like that, but he's extremely timid. And so I'm curious what his deal is and what his, you know, is he, like, trying to escape the pressures of corporate life and having to be, like, really go-getter and forward in order to get anything done, and he, like, just wants to be, like, a girl online to escape that? Like, what's his reasoning? So I'm curious.
But I thought there was never a girl online.
Well, there isn't in that case, because... Yeah, the guy's a girl and the girl's a guy, so it's confusing. The girl's reasoning for picking a Bishonen avatar is actually just really basic. She's just like, well, if I have to look at a hot piece of ass while I'm playing, you know. Like, that's her reasoning. But I feel like the guy's is probably different, so I'm curious. But yeah, it's just really sweet and hashtag relatable and cute and, like, you know, it's good.
Yeah. Yep, I liked it. Let's see. I didn't get a chance. I'm going to watch Kino's Journey, but I didn't get a chance to take a look at it yet. What did you think?
I miss the old aesthetic. I miss the old...
Really?
Yeah, so I don't like the... So the one thing I didn't like about that old aesthetic...
Digipaint?
Well, I mean, that's the limitation of the technology, but I'm talking about simply especially the sound design, those, like, hollow bells and, you know, sort of distant ambient noise that goes on in the background of this sort of more, less anime, less real looking. So the new Kino looks like it takes place in a real place that actually exists. Like, the way everything is drawn and animated and paced and stuff like that, it seems like, okay, here's an actual world with people in it. And the old Kino felt like you were looking at, like, a fable or something, like, you know, it was, like, old-fashioned drawings of old-timey people or something, which gave it a very different aesthetic. So it didn't feel so literal, I guess. And this Kino, like, it's good, and I don't mind the new aesthetic. I miss the old fable-y. And, it took some time for that to sink in, because at first I was like, well, this looks a lot better, and it's animated better, and I can't really take umbrage with it. But thinking after some time and distance, I was like, you know, I think because these stories are so abstract, they're not things that can happen in the real world, I miss that non-real-looking aesthetic. But I don't miss the scan lines over the... So the old Kino's Journey, the entire show takes place under a fake scan line LCD filter, so I don't miss that. I don't know why they did that. But everything else, it's like, eh, kind of miss the old look. But it's the same stories. The writing is the exact same. So if you liked it then, you'll like it now. You know.
All right. Well, I never got through all the way through the original, largely because of the Scanlan shit. So,
right. It's a series of philosophical arguments.
I read the manga for Girls Last Tour, at least the first volume. I didn't watch the show though. Was it?
I liked it. I seemed to like it a lot more than other people. Once again, because similar to Urahara, the two girls in it were not like moe. They were just people. They were just, like, girls. And it was... it's not I also thought it was going to be, like... The girls are happy... So, the reverse of this. Usually, it's, like, the girls are happy and peppy and moe, but they live in an apocalypse wasteland, so it's supposed to be the contrast between, oh, these girls just keep on going, and they're looking for... Like, school life is like this. They're looking for hope and a smile, but the world is dark and fucked up, you know, like... and I like school life, but mostly because of the plot, because it's very clever about how it reveals things. Mm-hmm. But the actual, like, these girls are super cute and moe and have these... stylized personalities against the dark, grim world. I didn't like that aspect. I just thought that the plot was really well told. Girls Last Tour is the opposite of that. Like, it just seems like it's very down to earth, chill. The two girls that seem very, like, relatable and nice. And the world that they live in isn't, like, ruined or anything. It's just, it seems like it's sleeping for a while. Like, okay, y'all fucked it up. Like, the apocalypse or war or something like that fucked up the world, and it's just sort of recovering now. And it doesn't seem like they're under constant threat of death or anything. They're just traveling through the world and, like, gathering resources and talking about their feelings. And it was just, I don't know, it was just very relaxing. Yeah. It seemed very hopeful for an apocalypse story. Usually those things are not, it's not trying too hard to, like, shock you. It's just, like,
I think the manga, I think the manga being black and white kind of, adds a little bit to the ambiance being a little bit more downcast, but I should get around to watching it. I ran out of time. That was the last thing on my list for this show, but it sounds like I should get to it. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, I liked it a lot, but your mileage may vary, certainly.
Let's talk about something I did watch, okay. Garo Vanishing Line. Everyone was excited because it looks like an 80s OVA.
It does.
And it does look like an 80s OVA. It's pretty well animated, too. Like
it opens with a titty monster.
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of Garo, right? Like, yeah. Titty monsters is a Garo thing.
Yeah, but I mean, not usually it's not like literally a giant grape, a bunch of grapes, except the grapes are all boobs.
Mm.
Like, it's hardcore boob monster.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I wanted to like Garo a lot more than I did. Like, I appreciated the aesthetic. Anything that throws back to that stuff generally will make me happy. I'm pretty easy to please on that front. But I just didn't get into the story. Like, I've seen the first episode of a lot of different Garo things, and more than the first episode of a couple different Garo things. Mm-hmm. And, like, it's kind of the same sort of through line every time, and it's not that like I'm tired of that old Garo story or anything, because it is just basic.
It's extremely basic, so it's just adaptable.
I'm a knight, there's some demons, I transform into this thing to fight the bad guys. That's pretty okay. You can't really take a huge amount of umbrage, I guess, with that as a plot structure, because that's very basic.
It's very bare bones. They change.
And so you can add a lot to it and change a lot to it. But the story in this particular Garo, I just didn't find it all that compelling. It didn't really grab me. The aesthetic grabbed me. The story didn't. And I feel like there's a couple execution points on it that could have been a little bit more exciting, or been a little bit more creative, or a little bit more unique, or something like that. For whatever reason, I just didn't really cotton to it that much.
Yeah, I liked it, but I feel like I can't say that if I'll like the story or not until I see more of it. Like, it just felt like it was too introductory. I don't really have a good... And the introductory aspect was, it's an 80s OVA, so here's Extremely Macho Macho Man, which is funny, but, like, I can't sympathize with him yet. He's funny, I guess, but that's about it. And like his girl sidekick or whatever. But what it reminded me of most, which is unfortunate, is the anime adaptation of Devil May Cry.
Mm.
And
that's not a bad comparison. And here's the thing, you can throw back to the 80s and everything, but it's not a very creative one. Mm-hmm. And it's not very original, and it's not particularly great looking. It looks okay. It doesn't look phenomenal, and it's not super, like, in terms of throwback, there is a lot of those type of shows, like throwbacks to that kind of thing, and some of them are done better and some of them are not, and I don't think this is an example of a particularly successful one. Like, it's fine, it just didn't, it's just not very special.
I would say I liked the aesthetic and the execution more than you did, rather than, so the style, you're right, like, could be stronger, like the promotional posters and stuff.
Well, I mean, like, the character designs.
Yeah, well,
the direction's really good, and the
direction is really
good. I like the aesthetic. It's just, I think it's just the character designs. It just didn't really grab me.
Well, the promo art for it looked a little more Koike-ish, and then the actual show is doesn't have that scratchiness to it. It doesn't have the rough. It's very clean, which doesn't quite gel with the whole 80s thing. I was like, I was expecting it to be a little rougher and grittier. So the fact that it looks so clean is a little bit of a downstep. But like the direction is really, really good. I forgot the director's name. I think they're new to like directing full series, but like it was like very much a evidence that this person is a very talented storyboarder and understands pacing and comic timing and stuff like that. It was really, really good. There's one other show this season that was more cinematic, but that was definitely an easy second.
I'm going to watch more of it. I'm going to watch the second episode and see where it goes and give it more of a chance. Yeah, I'm not sure. Maybe I was just in kind of a cruddy mood when I saw it or something.
Well, the story is not there yet.
I just didn't really cotton to it,
It's not there yet. Like, the story is not quite... I don't know what to think of that yet. But the way it was directed was definitely the strongest thing about it.
All right. There's a show called The Ancient Magus Bride.
Never heard of it.
That is easily, far and away, the most popular thing of the season.
Yeah.
It was okay. Boy, I feel like I'm being a huge bummer this entire time. But there are two or three things that I really liked.
For me being the bummer.
Yeah,
now
right.
Being the
now
bummer.
It's me being a huge bummer about everything. It was okay, I guess.
See, I saw the OVAs, and I think that has fortunately, or I'm going to say fortunately, skewed my perspective on that first episode. But
yeah, I just didn't think there was very much art to it. You know, like, it seemed very pedestrian direction. For such lavish source material, the direction seemed kind of pedestrian, very TV anime, like, not that many really great moments of cool animation or anything. And, like, I guess I was expecting something more like the OVAs. I don't know. Maybe I was expecting too much. I don't know.
Well, I mean, that's totally fair. I think that
the story's fine. It is what it is.
Yeah. I think the show definitely could have started off with more of a bang. It is, like you said, more low-key. But because I saw the OVAs, I have a different perspective. So the OVAs take place after she's been living with the with Elias. Skullface. Bone Daddy, as I like to call him. And this has been after he's given me a face. It's really fun. Say Bone Daddy and you'll feel happy.
It's from The Nightmare Before Christmas.
It's fun to say. I don't care. I like saying it. Anyway,
nice work, Bone Daddy. Don't you remember that guy?
Yeah, I remember. It's just really fun to say. And that's usually not a quote that people pull from Nightmare Before Christmas.
It's in the trailers.
Well, it's usually not what people pull from that film. But, like...
that's what I think of.
Anyway, it's a common silly nickname. But anyway, so this is before...
Because people love that movie, The Nightmare Before Christmas. Sorry, go on. Yeah. Go on.
This is a little while after Chisei has moved in with Bone Daddy, and the world is more filled with magic and wonder to her, and she's remembered. So it's the OVAs are really good. They juxtapose, like, the Ghibli-type fun magic that's a little scary but mostly cool, her present day with her past, which all that stuff still existed then, but it was terrifying to her. And it's a really good contrast, and the OVAs are just a really good story, and it's animated really well, and it's more lavish. It has that spectacle that you want.
I think so. So,
yeah. But the first episode is not like that, and I think it's because, not only because, okay, well, it's a TV production, so they're going to pare down more, and they're going to sort of build up, they have to build up to her, like, feeling decent about things. They can't really play for spectacle when it's about somebody who's so depressed that they sold themselves into slavery, because they were just like, I don't have anywhere else to go. So I think the first episode was just about putting you in her headspace and being like, okay, she's depressed, this is how it feels to be depressed and feel like you have no place to go. So the tone I thought was just about putting you where Chisei is emotionally, which means there's no room for, like, flourishes of magic.
It felt like I'm dead inside,
and this is what it feels like.
It felt like the camera was mid shot the entire time.
It wasn't.
It felt like it wasn't at all.
I get what you're saying, but, like, if you get
what I'm saying, then you know what I'm saying.
It, yeah, but it
flat,
it
uninspired direction.
I'm gonna go. So unless future episodes, I'm sure are gonna prove me wrong. But given what I saw of the OVAs and they have the same team, and what I saw of, like, the PV and showing future episodes and stuff like that, and the tone that they're going for, I'm gonna optimistically say that the first episode was more toned down because there was no room for spectacle. They are trying to make you feel completely like this person who has lost all hope and is shut out from the world. I'm going to say that that's the intent.
Cool.
If it proves me wrong later, if the show is weirdly flat for the rest of it, then I will be proven wrong. But I think that's the intent. I think it's only going to be demure for this first episode, and it's going to ramp up later.
Sorry, you're right. There were also isometric shots.
They were close-ups.
Put the characters in some place other than the very middle angles of the frame.
There were long
or
shots.
Isometric.
They were long shots. There were oblique angles. There were close-ups. All right, okay. But you're right. There was very little music. The energy was low.
I think it had a lot more to do with it.
Well, yeah, but I think that was intentional because it's supposed to be Chisei is just, she's not here. She's not present. And I thought, because the first moment where it starts to become a little more energetic is when Elias picks her up and takes her back home. And even then, and then it goes away right after he says, oh, you're my bride. She goes, what? And then it just sort of ends. And so it's like there's a moment where she's starting to feel safe and welcomed, and then it goes away again. So I thought it was just about fully establishing her emotional state instead of doing it through exposition or ham-fisted, whatever. I thought it was a choice.
They should call call that show Skullface Slave Owner.
Now... to be fair, she sold herself into slavery.
Cow Skull, you know, the slave owner.
That is the important thing to mention about this, is that its conceit, its premise is going to bother some people. But I thought the execution of it, so it's, for me, it's not about the thing, it's not about the story, it's about the framing. For me, framing is everything. You can have whatever premise, and provided that you show that premise in a way that dictates your worldview and your feelings about it.
What about the premise is the Confederates won the Civil War?
No, well, if you're the Game of Thrones, if you're the Game of Thrones guys, you should not make that. That's
whatever premise you said.
Well, some are going to have a lot more trouble than others, and if you're the Game of Thrones guys, no, you're not going to be able to frame it well enough. But like,
if there was anything truly like. Blech about this, it would have come out in the reviews of the manga years ago. Like,
I think so.
We've been running review. The manga's up to like volume 9 or something like that, and like at least here in the States, it's up past. Like, they've been publishing it for quite a while, mm-hmm. and like, I feel like you would have heard.
Well, the thing about Blechness,
and the reviews would have said something about it.
Well, the thing about Blechness is that it is a personal judgment. And so I understand. I knew while watching this, I'm like, there are some people for whom this is just not, they're not comfortable with this being romanticized at all.
Yeah, and that's position. And that's edged close enough to like just uncomfortable material so that if it struck the wrong tone, mm-hmm. you would know.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think for the majority of people, it does not strike the wrong tone. And I think the reason for that is because, A, Chisei sells herself into slavery, and it's not like a Thermian argument thing where it's, for those who don't know, Thermian argument is like, oh, it's canon that the rape goblins love to rape or whatever. That's the argument. And,
Kentaro Miura said.
Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those. So I'm not saying that Chisei sold herself into slavery as an excuse. I'm saying that that means something. The fact that she did that means that she is, reached the end of her rope, and basically she is throwing herself to the wolves, as it were. And the wolf that picks her up, she's kind of lucky. The wolf that picks her up is benevolent. He's not, however, but there are consequences to what she did. He's not like, she's not a beautiful prince who rescues her from a bad situation, because that would be problematic.
No, he's a cow skull headed slave owner.
But here's the thing, but he's also not like, oh, you're gonna marry me, you're gonna be my bride, you're gonna this, that, the other. He's a weird recluse who doesn't understand how humans work, and he sees her like he would a pet. So he's basically adopted this person who sold herself into slavery, and he's like, you know, this is where you sleep, and this is your bed, like, this is your food dish, like, and she's like, what's wrong with you? You know, like, so it's an interesting dynamic where it doesn't seem like she's threatened by this guy. It seems like if she wanted to leave, that he would let her, etc. She actually owns half of the sum that she got for selling herself. The auction house owns the other half or whatever. She could get out of this situation. She has no desire to, and the guy that has bought her is, like, interesting and weird and isn't trying to control her behavior. He's just like, he obviously has no understanding of human social mores, so he just thinks that he just has a pet now that he's supposed to teach magic to pass on his legacy. And so it's a weird situation. So I don't think it has, so for most people I would say that it doesn't ring as so much as problematic as it does this, here's an interesting situation where we're going to explore these people's emotional deficiencies, and maybe they'll fall in love. Maybe they won't. From the way I've heard about this, despite the bride in the title, there's not a lot of romance. It's more like, I don't know, a very intimate emotional connection between these two, kind of like,
there's literally nothing about the way the show is executed that indicates that they're going for sincere romance.
Yeah,
I would not expect that from the story at all.
Even if she kisses him on the head or kisses him on the mouth, it doesn't look like romance, because he's a shadowy thing inside of a cow.
He doesn't have a mouth, he has a jaw.
You know, it's a weird situation where I think the story is really fascinating. I do have a soft spot for Beauty and the Beast narratives, but only when they're done well, because I absolutely hate the ones that are done poorly, and this is done really well so far and uniquely, so I'm excited about it.
Well, you can always read the manga.
I know. I wanna watch the show.
Yeah, I'll probably watch the show too. It's the direction left me a little flat. I just didn't really feel much, and I was expecting to feel something.
Right. Yeah. Look. It's slow. I'll
watch those OVAs. They probably give me what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next thing was, I would say, like, the thing I liked the most was MMO Junkie number 2, Land of the Lustrous. I liked it a lot. You were not as hot on it, but the whole thing is just whether or not you dig the aesthetic, because it's a 3D show with 3D characters. I think it gets closer to looking good than most other, and that's largely due to the style, but yeah. You kind of have to be into the style, because the story is really straightforward.
Well, that was the thing, is it wasn't so much the style that bothered me. It was like, oh, I can't really get into these characters yet. They're just kind of, I don't know, they're kind of basic, and I didn't really cotton to any of them yet.
I liked the dynamic that they set up between clumsy clumsy girl
Foss.
It's not a girl, sorry. Clumsy gem
rock alien
clumsy rock versus ostracized rock.
Mm-hmm. Foss and Cinnabar.
Yeah, whatever. What? They're going to become friends and get to learn to know each other. But I really liked the setup. I really liked the aesthetic. Like, my brain is just keeps repeating images from it. Like, oh, this was neat, and this was neat, and this was neat. And mm-hmm. I loved it when they cut the enemy's head apart, and it turns into a seed pod, and then gems start rising out of the seed pod. Like, that's really cool abstract
imagery. I liked the enemy designs a lot more than the gem designs. These, like, weird...
I liked it, especially when they, like, broke apart and stuff. It was really neat.
Yeah, I like them a lot. I'm just saying I like them more than... The gems are like, okay, these are CG... They have a little bit of a CG doll body quality to them, which works because they're rocks. But, like, I don't know, like... The aesthetic was fine. It was kind of interesting, but like...
it just didn't grab you.
It wasn't super...
Lots of this stuff didn't grab me, but this one did. I mean, I just had a strong response to the... It reminded me a little of Razaphon a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Like, the enemies had that Razaphon. They had that, like, old world, like, clay golem quality to them that was interesting.
Yeah, you know, white Renaissance masks and stuff like that. And, like, the spindly character designs, you know, long legs and like, thin arms and stuff like that. Like,
yeah, but I would
Razaphon had that going on too, so it kind of reminded me of that a little bit. It had, definitely had its own style. It was cool. I'm looking forward to seeing more of it. I liked it a lot.
If CG anime usually bothers you, I would say give this a shot, because I think it's the closest to CG anime has come to working visually.
I was okay with Trapped in Exile. I was okay with was it Exiled from Paradise or
I
want to say Trapped in Paradise, but that's a different film.
Yeah, Exiled from Paradise or something like that. But that movie, look, that's all story for me. That movie's visual aesthetic.
Occasionally it looked okay. Like, that was the closest it got in moments where it kind of, the character models looked close enough to where it was like, all right, I guess this looks okay. Mm-hmm. This is kind of like that, where the character, it's close enough. You can tell, but it's watchable.
Right.
You know, it doesn't look terrible or anything. So yeah, I thought it was great. A lot of comparisons to Steven Universe because of Gem People, but... Mm-hmm. Other than gem people and, I guess, like, kind of messing around a little bit with, like, but, I don't want to say that it's messing around with, like, gender or anything like that, because it's just, like, the characters just don't have
one. Right.
And it's not part of the story, and it's not brought up. Yeah. So, like, Steven Universe has a lot of that stuff in it, a lot of, like, mm-hmm. you know...
Specifically talking about those things.
Specifically discussing
the gems.
That stuff.
Specifically choosing to frame themselves as women. And
yeah,
like,
but it's but the two shows don't have anything in common.
And Land of the Lustrous, they don't specifically choose to frame themselves as anything because they don't choose what they look like. They're just sort of. They seem like they were. Their bodies seem like they were factory made. They have like all the same body type, but the hair and the eyes are different and stuff like that.
Well, the hair hardness. And the eyes are just whatever gem they are.
Exactly.
So,
and,
yeah.
So this is, you know, kind of interesting.
It's cool. I liked it. You were excited about Blood Blockade, Battlefront, and Beyond.
Yep.
I never finished Blood Blockade, Battlefront, and Before.
Right.
Which is now what the first season is called.
It's called, right, yeah. No, I really liked that first season. The second season, I can already tell, isn't going to be as special.
They lost the director, right?
They lost the director, so...
she's a special director.
She is. But it is going to be easier to follow. It might play to a bigger audience easier, because the thing about Matsumoto is she does go mile a minute. It is the experience of watching Blood Blockade Battlefront is like, did you catch that? Oh, it's gone. Did you catch that?
It's part of the reason I never got through it.
Yeah, well, I found that charming.
I was trying to relax.
Yeah, I found that charming, and I found it also, it really gelled well with Yasuhiro Naito's aesthetic, which is also the same thing. If you read any of his comics, it's one panel tells half the story or whatever, and then you're like, whoa, how do we get here, etc. And like, it's a bit of a problem, but I thought that Matsumoto's direction kind of aided it, so it did make sense. And or made more sense. His writing does make sense. You just have to pay close attention, and you do for this as well. This season, you can already tell, like, they adopt the same a lot of the same tricks. It's just that the clarity is there, but it also lacks the ingenuity of, like, specific ways that they would use the camera, and it would make really feel like Manhattan, like, really feel like Manhattan. This just feels like really well-animated version of, you can tell it's Manhattan, but you can't, like, smell the smog and, like, see the security cameras whirring and somebody, like, selling newspapers on the street. Like, it doesn't have quite that level of intensity to it. But it's these are very, very, very slight differences. It's basically the same show. So, you know, it's not a major difference, but you can tell it's a little bit different. So, otherwise, I mean, the material is still the same. The actors are all the same. The animators, most of the animators have stayed, so it still looks great. There's a cut by, I think it's by Yutaka Nakamura, I think. But, you know, shame on me if that's wrong. But in the first episode, that is amazing. It's just a really good cut of a monster getting skewered by a cross so that his, it's a big cross while the monster's running toward it, and the monster hits it full force with his face, and the cross goes through his body, and the rest of him keeps running. And so the rest of him keeps running, and then it bursts out the back, and then purple blood shoots along the cross axis and in the shape of a cross, and it's just disgusting and great, and it's a really good cut. So, and that's basically Blood Block A Battlefront in a nutshell. So, crosses and monsters and blood.
Maybe if the plot slows down a little bit, maybe I'll check it out. I don't know. Last thing to discuss here, Inuyashiki, Last Hero, from the creator of Gantz, comes more Gantz-style entertainment. This is about a very passive old man who's just dealing with how horrible society is on a regular basis, and wouldn't you know it, he gets imbued with some sort of alien technology that gives him all sorts of weird, crazy cyborg powers of some kind. His body starts coming apart and it's steaming and everything like that. I have read the first volume of the manga for this. I have read and seen most of Gantz, including all the live action stuff. I am tired of his worldview.
Yeah, I feel you.
I am tired of the everyone is an evil piece of shit. Let's revel in watching them get destroyed. Let's revel in watching the ills of our society be brutally murdered. And let's have people behave like monsters at all times to justify it. So all the characters behave in ways that will justify their later violent comeuppance that will be framed as a fetish. That will be framed, you're watching these people get destroyed as fetish material. That's the way Gantz is.
Right.
That is the way Inuyashiki is.
So I disagree, purely because of the way that the show was.
It's just getting started.
I know.
Just
here's
getting
the thing.
Started.
I totally believe you that it will. But here's the thing. Gantz didn't have a sympathetic... The anime, I don't know about the manga, but like...
Oh, no. The manga was always worse, so...
Well, okay. Well,
whatever you're going to say, it applies to the manga, too.
Well, no. It's what I was going to say was it didn't have a sympathetic, a truly, actually sympathetic character that was framed as, like, there's like, emotion and meaning in what they were doing, and you're supposed to really feel things for them. Not feel that they're righteous, but just feel like this is a human experience.
He intends for you to care about the characters. It's just impossible because the story is so cynical.
Well, it's not impossible in Inuyashiki. I thought, so for one thing, the music is phenomenal, the pacing is phenomenal, the storyboard, this was, I said Garo's like second in cinematicness in terms of the premieres this season. This is the most cinematic anime premiere I think I've seen. Apart from, so there's some CG models that we don't really need of the man and his dog. The CG models of the robots are fine, but like the human CG models are distracting. So apart from that, if you were to take that out, this was extremely well constructed, like really, really cinematic, artistic, confident execution of the story. Like there were moments in it that were like, oh, this seems like it would be like in a Satoshi Kon movie or something, like specifically where they're attacking the guy and then he busts out and blows him up. It was like, oh, okay, this is really, really well done. I don't know where the story is going, but I mean, I'm cautious because it's a fucking Gantz guy, but like the execution of it was weirdly heartfelt, and I thought that it was.
It didn't seem heartfelt to me.
It seemed really emotional. The whole first half of
it felt like a bitter person setting up this super passive, innocent-seeming old man who's like, oh, I'm just, oh, the world is so mean, I'm so good, and the world is so bad to me.
He doesn't think he's so
good.
Can't
you wait to watch me punish all these fuckers?
He didn't think like he was so good. He thinks nothing of himself.
No, but that's the way he's framed.
Yeah.
Well, that guy doesn't really exist. That's not a real guy.
Well, okay, well, there's...
It's a self-aggrandizing image of an old person. It's this look at how innocent... Like,
choosing...
This is the fucking Gantz guy, man. This is what he does.
I know, but I... So somebody pointed out that this is the Gantz guy remaking Ikiru. I have the title right? The Kurosawa movie I have not seen. somebody pointed out that, like, oh, the beats are the same, like, it uses the exact same shot framing and, like, has them do the same things or whatever. It's the Gantz guy attempting to remake Ikiru, which might be why it's more emotionally salient than his normal work. And, no, I have to disagree.
I found the framing of the character to be total, like, baldly manipulative. Obviously, like, oh, you're setting up so this... Like, this has an unbelievably poor opinion of everybody who is young and is framing everything that way.
That is a problem.
Every character in the show is a piece of shit.
However, that is a problem.
Except the main character who is framed as this perfect, innocent...
He's not perfect or innocent, though. He has
He's
issues.
Just trying to get by... All of his quote-unquote issues are him just trying to get by.
But he's also, like, weak-willed. He's a wormy guy who basically, like...
That's presented as pitiable.
It's presented as pitiable. Here's the thing. Pity is not the same thing as sympathy. And you are supposed to feel sympathy toward him, but you're not supposed to resonate with him. Like, you do want to see this guy stand up for himself. And he doesn't... He feels like he doesn't deserve to stand up for
himself. Stand up for himself against cartoonish representations of young people.
That's a problem. I'm not saying that it's not going to get worse or whatever. I'm saying that the execution of this was really strong. I thought it was really emotionally resonant. I thought it worked, especially those last couple minutes. Like, those were really good.
Yes,
it was.
I agree with you.
Episode.
I just can't. I'm just sick of this. That dude's tone.
I am sick of it. I totally get it.
It feels like I'm watching propaganda. It feels like I'm watching, this is you. You're the good person. Mm-hmm. Look at all these evil people out in the world. We're gonna relish in their violent destruction. Mm-hmm. No, man.
I totally get it. Look, I totally get it. And if it gets much more like that, and here's the thing, the framing...
Gantz is that way through the whole thing, and I read through the whole thing when I was a much angrier person.
I know, but this is an
adaptation.
And
even then, I was like, this is too fucking much.
But this is an adaptation of somebody's work that is way more emotionally vulnerable than maybe either the manga was, or maybe as a manga creator, and again, maybe him trying to base this on a famous Kurosawa movie forces him to be more emotionally vulnerable. I don't know. All I know is, if I were judging it on its own, I can totally see it getting Gantzy and shitty later. Absolutely. However, the first episode, I was like, no, this is strong. I don't want to judge it by what I think it will turn into, because that's not quite fair. I have to judge it based on this first episode alone. I thought it was really strong, and I thought it was moving, and I thought it was emotionally vulnerable. And the really shitty everybody thing is a real problem, and you're absolutely right. Like, we need more than just one person with any decency for it to be good. So hopefully we will get that as it goes on, and if we don't, like, that's gonna be a
the way this guy usually will do that is by introducing someone else who's extremely despicable, and then you get to know that they have reason for being that horribly despicable. Well, world is a fuck, so I gotta do things this way, and that's how you're supposed to relate.
That's
to
probably gonna be the teen character who got robotized along with the old man.
I feel as though I'm predicting the future. Anyway.
Yeah, all I'm saying is I enjoyed it. I don't think that it's...
I'm a sociopath, but it's the world's fault.
Well, this guy's not a sociopath. Like, I enjoyed it. I fully realize that the author is probably going to lead this down a shitty road. However, like...
I read the first volume, so I couldn't tell you. All I know is the tone is there right away. Yeah. Right away, the tone is there. So why would I... Yeah, anyway.
The episode as presented, I thought, was really worth watching and was really good and strong and interesting.
If you like the Gantz stuff...
I don't like Gantz, though. I don't. And I thought that this was strong. I thought this was strong material. I thought it was interesting.
Everyone's entitled to their opinion.
And besides, regardless of anything, I think his name Daisuke Nakamura? I don't remember. I think that it got his name wrong, definitely. But the guy who directed Death Parade and Mob Psycho directed the opening theme for this, and the opening theme is like...
Yeah, it's super good.
It's super good. It's like, oh my god. I don't like Man with a Mission, so I don't like the song. Man with a Mission is not my kind of music, but the directing of the opening sequence is really good. So,
okay. Let's get on to some Twitter questions. We got some of them. Here's a tough question to answer. Over double, it's not a tough question. Wants to know the favorite Gundam opening.
The only one I remember is...
Gundam Wing is the one you remember.
Yes, it is.
It's the one everyone remembers because it's the best one.
All right, so there's that's the only one I remember. I'm not a Gundam person. I haven't watched much.
There's good Gundam openings that are not Gundam Wing. But Gundam Wing is the most memorable.
Yes.
It has a great song. Everyone's heard the song a million times. The animation's really cool and good. And it's also very... extremely emblematic of like 90s anime. So like you would show that if you're like, here's anime in the 90s and you show Just Communication for sure.
Yes.
Anyway.
Yeah. Sorry.
Kaylin Evergreen wants to know, Jake, thoughts on Food Wars' production quality slipping a little?
This happens to things that have run for this long with a bunch of breaks and stuff like that, and they're just making it to advertise the manga. Like, I think that it doesn't look like crap yet, so, but, I mean, it is the third season of Food Wars, and the first season was, like, double length or whatever, so it's gonna start slipping, you know.
Yeah, whatever.
It's gonna happen.
Let's see. Kuroz923 asks, what show most deserves a big Toblerone? Remember, a couple of weeks ago, there was this Netflix thing called Neo Yokio.
I've already forgotten.
And, there was a joke in it where he had a big Toblerone, and people made a big deal about that on Twitter for about 24 hours.
Oh, a couple of weeks, there's people cosplaying as him.
I did, yeah, there was a cosplayer from Neo Yokio. What, I mean, I guess the question there is, like, how do you determine what deserves a big Toblerone? Mm-hmm. In the show, he shows up with a big Toblerone because someone is sick, I think.
Well, he tells her that she doesn't deserve the big Toblerone when she starts railing against capitalism. And so, apparently, you have to be a capitalist, like, bougie fuck to deserve the big Toblerone. Because if you start talking about how we must... What's the old communist joke? We must
seize the means of production.
Sorry, my brain blanked. If you talk about we must seize the means of production, you don't deserve a big Toblerone. So I think that's the answer according to the show.
Are there any heavily socialist anime this season? No, I don't think so.
Well, they don't deserve it. Are there any heavy capitalist ones?
They're all sort of
right. So they all deserve the big Toblerone.
I'm not saying that every anime is capitalist bougie fuck, but it is all produced under a capitalist system and is designed to turn a profit. So, anyway, let's move on. What's Your Name wants to know, do you think Rie Matsumoto got blacklisted by the anime industry after what happened with the finale of Blood Blockade Battlefront? The finale was delayed 3 months, and it was anime original, and everybody returned for the sequel except Rie Matsumoto. Do you think she got blamed for it? And what's she doing right now? It's been 2 years since she directed that show. And I haven't heard from her since.
So I don't think that that is accurate. She's not the only person who didn't return. The screenwriter, although that person was a friend of Matsumoto's from another project. But the screenwriter, which means that the actual screenwriter for the anime original stuff was Ryu Matsumoto, BT Dubs. When it's like, oh, this uncredited person with no experience in anime who's like a friend of hers. It's like, okay, well, that person put her ideas into script. I think that they were hers, because I'm very familiar with her voice at this point. But like, I lost my train of thought. Other people left. I think one of the art directors left. There were multiple people that left production. It wasn't just her. And I certainly hope that she hasn't been blacklisted. I don't have evidence for that, so I don't, other than her not working, there's no reason to believe that. We don't know why she's not on the project. Either she didn't want to, or the studio was not interested. We just don't know. But it would be ridiculous if she was blacklisted from working. She has this long history of successful work on Pretty Cure and all this other stuff. So and she's an extremely talented animator. Like, it would be ridiculous if she wasn't getting work. And if she wasn't, I imagine it would have to be something wildly more serious than we know of, beyond just a delay. But I would believe that the delays alone... both the 1 week from the, so it wasn't just the last episode. I remember because I was reviewing it week to week. After episode 10, there was a recap episode, and then there was a 2 week delay before 11, and then there was 3 months before 12. So, I mean, like, something happened, but we don't know. So I would believe that that was reason enough that she wasn't part of the next one, part of the sequel. But she could have also just left of her own volition or whatever. But I hope she gets to do more work. Who knows what happened with that?
Yeah, I didn't see anything. She hasn't announced any new projects recently.
No, she's a little off. I would be extremely curious to find out what happened with the production on that led to her kind of disappearing and the team splintering. That's weird. It's a weird situation.
Anyway, let's move on.
Yeah, it's an unpleasant topic.
Petrio wants to know, Jake, you've mentioned a few times that you actually enjoy some titty shows. What would those titty shows be?
See, I can't even... That's assigning more remembrance to what they are than I actually have. It's just whatever's over the top enough or well animated enough to be entertaining, and isn't just... So, example of a bad one, Hajime Tenno Gal. it was not weird enough. So I watched that one because they had the horrible, like, 4-foot-nothing girl with boobs bigger than her torso. She just literally looked like she was pregnant when she sat down. That's how big the boobs were. I watched because of, like, that weird thing, and, like, you know, I thought maybe it was going to be funny or just bizarre or repulsive or something like that, and it wasn't any of those things. It was really safe. But the ones that are really, really gross and weird and repulsive, like Hybrid X Heart Ataraxia was one that I think I sat through most of. They just have to be... I'm not like, oh, this one's good, actually. If it's good, actually, it means it has a plot and it's not just weird, over-the-top fan service. Oh, I remember the most entertaining one I saw in recent years. After a season or two after it was out and we ran a review of it and I heard what happens in it, I looked up Valkyrie Drive Mermaid, and that show is ridiculous. Like, it's absurd. There's a girl that, like, grows to the size of a 7-story building and runs around naked, and she's the size of a 7-story building, so you can imagine what kind of fan service opportunities they came up with for that. But yeah, it's just, I can't really say, like, oh, here's a good one, because if it was a good one, it wouldn't be a fan service show. If it's just a fan service show, that means I'm just, like, going, haha, look at this ridiculous, weird, gross fetish. But, you know, it has to be really over the top. It can't be, like, a tame titty show or one that takes itself seriously. It has to be unabashedly, shamefully stupid. So there you go.
The closest thing to a titty thing that I really enjoyed was the Tenjo Tenge manga. Not the show. The manga.
The unanimated
show. And that
was
largely just due to the art. It's not that it's just that they're rare. Yeah, they are rarely memorable. Like, even one that's entertaining, it's not going to be particularly memorable. So it's hard to come up with, like, oh, yeah, I watched, like, 10 episodes of that. It was okay.
Valkyrie Drive Mermaid was, like, what, one or two years ago? Yeah. And I still remember it. So obviously that's the good shit if you want to watch.
There's, like, video
garbage.
Games and stuff for that. So
yeah, if you want to watch absolute garbage. But, like, I never sat through, like, Senran Kagura is too boring. Like, if it's just girls with big boobs doing stuff, it's not entertaining enough. It has to have, like, a ludicrous, nasty-ass premise. Like Hybrid X Heart or Valkyrie Drive Mermaid. So that's my bar. But even then I wouldn't be like, oh, it's good. No, it's not good. I'm not watching it because it's good.
All right. Well, moving on. Cowboy Funk asks, Blade Runner 2049 thoughts, of course. I fucking loved it.
It was great. But
it was the best movie I've seen this year. Mm-hmm. We could be here all day talking about...
We could. I thought it was inspired. I thought that it was... is it Dennis? I don't think it's Dennis. Like, Denise or something like that. Villeneuve. Like, I think that he understood that material better than anyone really should be expected to, because Blade Runner is kind of an obtuse movie, but he, like, got the heart and soul of Blade Runner and, like, just totally stuck to the spirit of that work, making his own thing. It was just as good a Blade Runner as I could kind of hope for, so I loved it.
Yeah, it was easily the best movie I've seen this year. I thought it was better than the original.
Yeah, that too.
If only because, like, the original was, you know, it is pioneered an aesthetic, an entire aesthetic, and yeah. It is probably the most influential science fiction movie aesthetically, mm-hmm. Aside from Star Wars. It is probably the most influential science fiction film,
certainly for noir,
but
for,
not
like, adult sci-fi,
but not from a story perspective. No. And you know, the original movie, like, Ridley Scott infamously assembled what he thought the themes of the film would be in the edit bay. Like,
right.
This was not like in the script was being rewritten as they were making that movie. Mm-hmm. The story in and of itself, like, there's incredible scenes in Blade Runner and incredible moments. Like, you know, Batty's famous speech at the end is, you know, it means something and everything, but it doesn't really quite come together in a way where you care deeply about the characters or the story is obtuse and it's very slow and not that much really happens in the original Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. 2049 is significantly longer by almost an hour, fills the entire thing with very, in my opinion, well-paced story. I didn't really feel the length of the film that much. A lot of people
did. Yeah.
But I was just eating it up. I just kind of gave myself over to it. It enhances and emboldens the themes of the original and seems to understand them very deeply. Mm-hmm. It surfaces a lot more roles for women. Mm-hmm. It is a better movie, and it's dumb to sit there and just talk about comparing them or whatever and talk about which one is better.
Right.
They're both great. This is the rare example of a sequel that they totally understood it and made you – I don't think you could make a better one. Mm-hmm. In terms of like what and under those production circumstances with what they were expecting, you have to have Harrison Ford back. We want people – you need to call back to the original film. You can't just make something that's completely – Right. completely disconnected from the original material because we want people to show up who have seen the original. Mm-hmm. During those, I don't think you could really have done it too much better. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe make it a little shorter. I don't know. But, like, I would thought it was just great. Mm-hmm. I thought he totally nailed it.
Yeah, I was really, really impressed with it. And I think that it is a little bit pointless to compare them because they came from such different, I guess, circumstances and cultures and goals and stuff like that. So I don't necessarily want to say it's better, but it is a stronger film. Even if it yeah. would, you know, it would certainly never exist with, and so would like 30 years of other movies without the aesthetic helmed by the original Blade Runner. But like the original Blade Runner is built around the scene where Rutger Hauer, you know, has his speech and has that chasing. Like it's the movie is built around that scene and the scene where the prostitute replicant gets murdered. Like it's built around those scenes, and then the rest of it is a lot of like, well, we thought that this would work, and we put together these scenes, but then we cut out the part that kind of makes them mean anything and put in something else because Ridley Scott thought this unicorn thing was more interesting. You know, so it's a little bit shaky, and this is just like, okay, I know exactly what I want to do, and just executed with complete confidence all the way through. You know, and it's not going to be for everybody, but the first one wasn't either. Like, people were like, oh, it's bombing. It's like, well, the first one was this weird niche.
Well, it's
movie
a question as to whether or not they should have spent $200 million yeah. on a sequel made 30 years after the fact to a box office bomb. Yeah, maybe that was really the question that they should have been asking themselves. Mm-hmm. But I don't give a shit about Warner Brothers' bottom line. Yes. I'm glad that they made the movie. It doesn't fucking matter to me. In fact, I think it's... Selfishly, I think it's fucking better that it bombed.
Well, because I would say that unless it affects Villeneuve's career, because I don't
which
want that
which it's not
to.
Going to.
Okay, well, then that's all.
I don't think it's going to. Uh-huh. They're going to keep that guy. He'll have chances, chance after chance after chance after chance. And no one blames him for this movie not doing well. It's not like he made a bad movie. Mm-hmm. People just didn't want to see it.
Right. Nobody wanted to see the
Nobody hour. Wanted to sit through a 3-hour ponderous, slow... sci-fi movie for nerdos, like right. for real nerdos, not like
nerd culture,
not
but like
I've seen Spider-Man and so I'm a nerd, actual dweebs that right. Like us that want to sit through your ponderous 3-hour sci-fi thing.
Yeah,
turns out that market is still fairly small.
Yeah, which is, you know, it's kind of refreshing. Like, I'm not glad that the movie bombed, but I'm not glad that
that's not what I'm saying, and I don't want it framed that way for even right. a second. Yeah, I'm not saying that I'm glad that it bombed. I'm saying you do get to then champion it.
Yes.
As yeah. this thing that people should see.
And
there's no point in championing, like, I really liked Guardians of the Galaxy. Man, you don't even need to finish a sentence.
And it's not going to get
shut
tired.
Up.
It's not going to get tired and worn out and hoard out by the pop culture nerd media machine. Like it's
yeah,
like,
it won't get driven into the ground.
And so I'm like, yay, this thing can maybe just be a special movie that exists, and maybe you can get memorabilia from it.
Because the minute they stop smelling money around it, they just drop it like a hot potato, yeah. and it's like,
and
oh,
then it
great,
can just exist as a yeah. piece of art with maybe some memorabilia or whatever.
There's not going to be four different types of Blade Runner socks every Christmas.
Yeah.
15 different Blade Runner lunch boxes.
If this meant anything to you, it is lost.
Wave 6
out.
Of the Blade Runner Funko Pops are available now from geekstore.net.
Yeah.
Get your limited edition Blade Runner prop replica. Shut the fuck ups. We have all the shut the fuck ups you need.
Get this big replicant plastic bag to put yourself in after you die.
Yeah, right. Okay. That was a great movie. If you didn't see it, which you probably didn't, go see it.
Our audience probably saw it.
Custom Zach, who wants to know, why do you think we tend to see less solidly sci-fi anime these days? They still get made now and then, but in relatively fewer numbers. Science fiction is not as popular as it once was. Mm-hmm. That's it. Yeah. Sci-fi was huge in the 80s and not as big in the 90s, but... It had a brief resurgence. Now that all genres kind of get blended together, mm-hmm. you see sci-fi stuff in like Marvel movies and stuff, but there aren't like people on a spaceship traveling the stars.
It's not popular with the teenagers these days.
Yeah.
The teenagers these days is who anime is made for.
Hopefully, maybe it's due for a resurgence. Maybe we'll suddenly start getting a bunch of sci-fi. Mm-hmm. Like it felt weird. Like
is sci-fi.
No, I mean like in space.
Oh, in space. Okay.
Science fiction. Not just augmented people. Like sci-fi.
Okay.
Starships.
That is sci-fi, but space fiction.
But that's what he's talking about. Solidly space. Sci-fi.
Okay. Well, hey, they're remaking Legend of Galactic Heroes, so.
They are.
Space.
Hair is not as glorious.
No, it isn't.
In which case, you might ask, what the fuck is the point?
Give this man some conditioner.
Okay. All right.
Some Pantene Pro V.
Phantasma wants to know, do you have any interest in watching the Heaven's Feel movie? Hell yeah.
Yep.
Fate Stay Night.
That's going to happen.
Bring it.
How are they going to adapt that story without the sex in it? That's my question.
How do you know they did? Also, the first movie is like it's just like part of the story. It's not just one movie.
Okay,
they're not foolish enough to do anything Fate Stay Night with just one thing.
Well, regardless of how many movies Heaven's Feel is, executing Sakura's story without the sex is a little bit impossible. Somebody told me that they were changing it to vampirism, which makes sense to me. So I guess it's just going to be vampirism. But that's hilarious. So anytime you see any vampire stuff in Heaven's Feel, it's actually fucking.
Yeah.
It was fucking and they changed it to
Jacob, I have something to tell you about the entire history of vampire stories when
they're
drinking blood.
I know that.
It's supposed to be fucking.
I know that. I'm just saying.
So they picked a really obvious one-to-one.
In vampire stories, originally, however, it was always a metaphor. In Heaven's Feel, it is a substitution for actually an eroge, which is a different situation, which is funny.
Is this the one with the sex worms?
Yes.
How do you think is it going to be like vampires?
Well, in Fate Zero, they weren't sex worms anymore. They were,
Oh, right.
They will just change it to... crazy making rotting worms, but she'll still be pretty and she'll suck blood. That's what will happen instead of taking dick, because that's what it was. It's sucking blood instead of taking dick. Oh, Fate Stay Night. Okay,
all right. Navy Cherub asks, given the breadth of good shows this season, is there a threshold for too many good shows in a season?
I don't know.
A good question. I think your enthusiasm, just everyone has a reservoir of enthusiasm, and that gets depleted fairly quickly. And you can't, if you have like 10 amazing things in one season, like we've had seasons where that was the case. Mm-hmm. Looking at the spread this season, it's a lot of good stuff, but it's not like too many totally amazing things. It's just a lot of watchable stuff.
Well, and a lot of stuff with a prior fan base that's like coming.
Yeah, but we just had one of those. We've had that all year. We had that, not in summer, but we had that in spring for sure.
Mm-hmm. It's more this season, I would say. Even more. Like, we don't give a shit about Black Clover, but guess how many people do, you know? Compared to all the other good stuff we were talking about that we're interested in, there's a bunch of stuff we didn't even talk about that, like, has a prior fan base. Like, even stuff we make fun of, like, UQ Holder, there's Ken Akamatsu holdouts who are, like, actually... I saw a lot of excitement about that from, like, Ken Akamatsu holdouts. They're like, oh, Negima, like, and...
People like Negima.
Yeah, I'm saying that there's a lot. For me personally, I think it raises all boats, as it were. I don't think that there's a negative to it necessarily. I don't think it's necessarily more likely to cause burnout for people. I think burnout kind of happens more when there's a bunch of bad crap that gets overhyped.
Too much good stuff is usually not really that not a problem, but I do think people's enthusiasm runs out after like three or four shows.
Yeah.
If there's like six really good shows, two or three of them are going to get kind of ignored.
Yeah, it just means if winter's weak, like they'll have more backlog, a fresh backlog to visit.
Yeah,
you know, so I don't think it's a problem. I would certainly rather have this problem than the opposite problem.
Man, I had to watch UQ Holder to make some images and GIFs for the feature that went up on the site this morning, mm-hmm. And the first couple minutes are just reanimated Negima.
Oh yeah,
and it's supposed to be like remember the idyllic days of Negima, and he runs through the school. There's all those girls, and then he's like, "Oh, good morning, everybody!" And then he sneezes, and all their clothes blow off. And the mean one goes Negima, and then like hits him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, "Man, the 2000s back with a fucking vengeance here." Ken Akamatsu, like that is just his thing.
Yeah.
Oh no, your clothes are off. Now you're punching me.
What's funny
studio
is
audience laughter. Mm-hmm.
What's funny is Ken Akamatsu, like, that stuff is really tired, and it inspired a bunch of other tired 90s stuff, but you can tell Ken Akamatsu's specific flavor of it apart from other versions of it, because there's there's less comedy and more heartfeltness, I think is what I associate with it, but I haven't seen, like, a fucking frame of Negima. I've seen a lot of ads for it, that's why I know who voiced him in the dub, but, like, I haven't seen an actual episode of Negima, but I've seen a lot of Love Hina. So my experience with UQ Holder and its weird Negima moments was like, this is Ken Akamatsu, like, to a T, like, even though it's a completely different franchise, this has the same tone as Love Hina, which is, so all his stuff has the same tone.
Yeah. Okay. For both of you, what do you think complete original and amateurish anime like Urahara or more polished ones like Just Because?
Polished? Just Because? Just Because is thoroughly mediocre.
I think he means polished animation-wise.
Oh, well, you could pick a bunch of different examples that are stronger than Just Because.
All right. You don't have to continue your crusade against Just Because.
It is mediocre. His production values are mediocre.
I'm not sure I understand your question. What do they mean? Like, more polished versus... more amateurish? I mean, anime is a wide and diverse medium. Lots of different kinds of shows get made.
IDK.
Sorry, brother. Send it back in next time if you want to rephrase that one. Jeff wants to know, your friend of mine, Jeff Sebitz, asks, how much of the success of Osomatsu-san reboot do you attribute to the voice actors?
Quite a bit.
It's not an insignificant... reason for the show being as popular as it is.
It is not in Japan. In America, maybe not, but in Japan,
I have no idea how popular it is here.
Well, I'm just saying the fans over here.
It's not even out on DVD here. Like, you can't buy the show.
Regardless of its popularity, I don't think that the people who love it over here love it purely because Daisuke Namikawa is in it or whatever.
No.
But in Japan, that was definitely a selling point. All of the promotional material for it early on was like, hey, it has these six voice actors. They're all, with maybe the exception of one, but I think all of them are very well-known veterans who are, you know, both sexy and comedic or whatever. And so that was definitely a selling point. But I don't think it, but here's the thing. Lots of other shows have done that. Lots of reverse harems, lots of, like, other kinds of, mostly reverse harems. Lots of other anime have done this, and it does succeed, but it's not necessarily, like, It doesn't do the numbers. It doesn't do hundreds of thousands of units like Osomatsu-san did. So that had something to do with it getting off the ground, but it succeeded more than that because it tapped into something that people found really raucously funny and relatable. So, I think it helped it get it off the floor, but it wouldn't have been a huge, ginormous, one of the biggest anime hits ever if not for more than that.
Hmm. Similarly... your friend of mine, Tristan Citrine, wants to know, I would be curious to learn both of your highly objective and factual rankings of the Matsunos. I, again, am not a Matsuno guy.
Okay, let me write down their names here. So, okay. So, first is Karamatsu, who is the Edgelord Chunibyo one, because he seems like he's the closest to a decent person. The only thing that's keeping him from being a decent person is his immense ego and delusion. But, like, he actually... The ego isn't, he's not selfish, the ego just causes him to be myopic, so, but, like, he actually has a heart and tries to do good things and wants people to love him, so, like, he's the best one by default. And then, let's see, the second one, I have to remember their names. I'm almost done, I'm trying to, she wants a ranking, I'm giving a ranking. Okay, I wrote them all down. Okay, so, second one is, I forgot the one in the, oh, okay. Second one's Todomatsu, because he seems like a real person that's the really shitty, like, I want nothing to do with my family and I want to be popular and you guys suck, so I'm going to try to be a normal person. Like, so that one. And then third is Ichimatsu, because he has the personality of a cat as a person, and who wouldn't want a cat as a person? And, fourth is Jushimatsu, because I need to put somebody fourth, but I don't care about 4 through 6. So I don't like Jushimatsu because I don't like my personality as random monkey cheese humor. It's not my thing. I don't like Toromatsu because he's basically just a nerd and that's not enough of a personality. And I don't like Osomatsu because the joke is that he has no personality, which is everybody hates Osomatsu. Nobody likes him. Everybody likes the other five. So yeah, my ranking is Karamatsu, Todomatsu, Ichimatsu, and then the rest. The other three, who cares? So there you go.
Okay. You have an answer. I'm curious about this. Manga Mavericks asks, do you feel the first episode of New Kino's Journey compares to the first episode of the 2003 series as an introduction to the show?
I don't think it was a good first episode. Like, it was a good choice. It looks nice. It was a perfectly fine first episode, but I don't think it was a good choice of material. It was one of the weaker Kino's Journey stories. I don't know why they started with that one. So I think that the first episode of the original series was a better introduction to it as a conceit. And, yeah. But it's all episodic anthology stuff anyway. So if you're gonna watch it, you're gonna get the better stuff and you're gonna remember that instead of the first one or whatever, because it's not a linear narrative. So they should have picked a stronger story, though.
Okay. Ultimate, Queen Nira 2 asks, Ultimate Moe Husband of Fall 2017, Sword or Elias?
That would be Bone Daddy. It's not even a competition. Like, Super 80s, I like giant jugs and I eat a 37-pound steak man is not...
I'll take that guy.
What? You want that guy instead of Bone Daddy?
Okay, first of all, fuck him. His, like...
He just needs to learn how to be a
human. His fucking King of the Vampire LARP attitude can fuck off. Totally full of... Nah, I don't like the I'm an aristocrat. Yeah, whatever.
He just doesn't know human social mores. Whatever. Once he learns them, he'll be decent. But here's the thing. Like, I don't have anything against Sword. I just don't... He's a hyper-masculine stereotype, so it's not... There's not much to attach to there. When we learn more
he's
about
funny,
him...
He's funny, lives an exciting life, likes to eat. What else is there?
He's aggressively heterosexual? So it's hard to take an interest in
him? It's an 80s OVA.
Right, so it's hard to take an interest in somebody who's that aggressively, I'm a man.
I'm just talking about buddies. Yeah. I'm not talking about... I guess the question was husband.
She's talking about husband.
Fucking neither of them.
Right.
Not gonna marry a fucking cow skull in a suit. Right.
Give in to the Bone Daddy.
No.
I just want to say
the
words.
Bone Daddy is Jack Skellington.
He said it. Yay! Bone Daddy, Bone Daddy, Bone Daddy. Okay.
Ferquin Root, is it me or is the little sister fetish just getting way more grossly blatant? No, it's you. That shit's
God it's passé. Like,
it's passé now, yeah, it's less. Like,
I mean,
you get a little sister show every now and then.
Aramanga Sensei did really well, though.
Okay.
But there was only one.
That was one.
I think that's because of the animation and the team on it and stuff like that. Because the story is so bone stupid. Anyway.
You just adding bone to things?
Oh, I didn't even think of that. No, I meant is really, really dumb.
It's Halloween, so you just add bone in front of things.
Bones and pumpkins and creepy ghouls.
You just sprinkle the words throughout your Halloween words throughout your sentence. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go to the store, vampire. What?
Pick up some zombie toilet.
It's Halloween. Okay.
Spooky, scary skeleton.
Okay. I don't think the little sister fetish is worse. It's just, it's still with us.
It's still with us. It hasn't gone away. But, you know, neither have, maids and cat girls. They've just warped and changed over time, so.
Yeah. Okay. Last question from Julian Moran. Do you guys plan on seeing The Disaster Artist when it comes out? Hell yeah.
Yes, I'm excited.
I am very looking forward to that. I don't know if it's going to be good or not, but I'm very excited. To see that. Mm-hmm. It sounds like good. We kind of had an argument about it, because originally I was sort of like, well, it doesn't feel right for a bunch of guys, especially because that movie's being positioned for Oscars. It kind of doesn't feel right, because they're just sort of building on, this phenomenon exists, and let's make a movie about the making of it. But according to all of the early reviews, there's enough art to this to make it its own thing. So I'm pretty excited to see it. Mm-hmm. I think I'm looking forward to that most. That and... The Star Wars, which I bought tickets for, which I apparently didn't need to buy advance tickets.
I'm just imagining a giant landfill full of Porg mugs.
Porgs.
Porg mugs.
Yeah, they're all from Disneyland, too. Disneyland is, covered in Porgs right now. There's Porgs fucking everywhere. Can't get away from it. It's an owl, a cat, and an otter? No, it's an owl.
A penguin.
A penguin and an otter combined.
No, a cat, a penguin.
Owl, penguin,
oh,
otter. Not a cat. Otter.
You're right. Okay.
Look at that face.
Yeah.
It's an otter. I don't like the way it animates.
No.
It looks weird. The little tongue and everything? Well, it looks too, like bad CG.
Yeah, it's too blatant of marketing. I can't.
Hey, look. I lived through The Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Well, that was bad, too.
They put Jar Jar on fucking everything you can think of. He was on the cover of Rolling Stone. They acted like Jar Jar. I'm not kidding. He was.
I know. It's funny.
They acted like Jar Jar was going to be the second coming. And, like, you are not going to believe how much everyone's going to love Jar Jar. This is just like we have a little stuffed animal creature in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's in the trailer for a second. And of course they merchandise the shit out of their mascot.
I'm not angry about it. It's just, if asked if I find it cute, my answer is no. It seems focus tested.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, it feels like angry. It feels like they asked a bunch of like Instagram teens what they thought the cutest thing was. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, put all that stuff together.
Yeah, just stick it all together.
Yeah. I'm excited about the movie though.
Mm-hmm. I want more of my boy Kylo Ren being sad and breaking things.
We'll see how it goes. All right, let's stop talking about Star Wars. That does it for us.
Once again, our thoughts turn to Star Wars.
As he thought, Star Wars-ishly. Jesus.
That's an Ernest Cline joke, for those of you who don't know.
Yeah. Anyway. Ready Player One.
Ready Player One. That's a movie. It's a movie.
It's coming.
I don't want it.
The trailer for it just looks like noise.
I don't want it.
Just looks like noise.
Put it away. I don't want it.
I'm sitting there watching it, and it's like he's like in the DeLorean, and there's Freddy Krueger, and you're like, is this supposed to appeal to me?
It's like dark Willy Wonka theme, and I'm like, where's a window? I need to jump out.
Anyway, that's our show. Big thanks for stopping by. Nope, that's not what I mean to say. Anyway, that's our show. Thanks to Jacob.
Hi.
As always.
Of course. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, it is. Mm-hmm. I love having you on the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. I love having you on the show, too.
All right. I'm glad.
I mean, you have to be here. You're the host.
Next week, I won't be.
Yeah, for the first time ever.
Because you're doing a Danganronpa episode. Mm-hmm. A Danganronpa cast. Spoiler cast. Next week. That'll be next week, so look forward to it. Anyway, as I said, that's our show. Big thanks to Jacob for stopping by. I can't get through it. I have to say that part or I can't get through the rest of it.
You can't get the
script has to have thanks to blank for coming by. Mm. That's the script in my brain. Yep. So let me start from the beginning. That's our show. Thanks to Jacob for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band New Division. You can find them at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play Music, Stitcher, YouTube, all those places. Like and subscribe, you know, all that shit. Anyway, thank you very much. We'll see y'all next week.
Bye-bye.
See, I can't do it without...
You better leave all that in.
I can't do it without
every bit
the
of it
script. Because my brain doesn't go from like, okay, that's our show. The theme song is Bucharest. But I can't get there. My brain is like, hang on, there's a plank missing.
Right.
Anyway, you know...